Jeff is actively trying to join the meeting right now. I think it would be nice if we could just hold up for a minute to see if
Okay,
he's
sure.
going to join. If you wouldn't mind just waiting a few moments.
Of course. Is he using a laptop or a PC or just his phone?
He was uncomfortable using his, he was having some problems with his computer, and so he's trying to join via phone. He did last time successfully. I'm not sure what the challenge is this time.
I think there's also, if he has the right kind of phone, a Zoom app for your phone.
You got to download that app or it doesn't work. You're right.
He has a flip phone.
Oh, never mind.
That could be trouble.
Andy, I suppose I leave it up to your discretion.
Well, we have a fair amount of stuff to cover. I would like to get going.
Andy, can you turn your volume up? Do you have a way to do that?
Me?
Yeah.
Sure. Let me see here.
Okay, Jeff, I've asked you to unmute. He's dialed in, and I'm pressing the button that says "ask to unmute." So let's just give this 1 minute.
Steve, I just set it on full.
That's better. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay, Jeff.
Unmuted. Hi.
Okay, great. So, Jeff, we now have you as a part of the meeting. Do you know how to mute your microphone, or what did you do to unmute?
I hit start six. The voicemail or the message right now came in and said dial star six.
Okay, so I think if you do that again, it'll mute you. But be aware that any ambient noise we're going to hear from you. But I'm glad that we got you connected.
Cool. I'll be very quiet.
Thank you for your patience, Andy.
Sure. All right, let's get started then. I call the meeting to order. First thing I wanted to ask if anybody has any additions to the agenda items. Sandy?
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
Can I go? Okay. Yeah. So I'm not sure who had a chance to tune in to the city council meeting on Tuesday to hear Andy's report. Aaron graciously introduced Andy, and despite some technical issues and our all not being present to be introduced to the council, I'm pretty sure that Andy's reporting on all the projects that we have underway and that we have successfully completed really spoke to the quality of our work. So I want to give you a really nicely done, Andy.
Oh, thank you.
And finally, I want to also thank you for your compliments to me and my work as chair. That was very sweet.
Oh, well, that's, you, comes by well earned. You know, you've been great. I really appreciate all the help you've given me for sure.
My pleasure.
Anything else from anybody? Aaron, I'm assuming we don't have anybody on public forum.
Peter Finkel is attending, but he hasn't indicated a request to speak, and I didn't receive any formal notifications through the email process beforehand.
Okay. Yes, Steve.
So, Aaron, I've got a question. So when somebody attends, are they listening now, or would they show up on our screen if they are part of the meeting, even though they're just simply listening?
Yeah. So this is just how the city council meetings are conducted. So, like for instance, at the council meeting before Andy was introduced and I was brought in, we were attendees. And when you are an attendee, you can hear everything and see the people who are panelists. Everyone here that has camera feeds right now are panelists. And so then you can be promoted up. So yes, they're viewing the entire thing.
So we could have 100 people watching this meeting, but we wouldn't know that. Is that correct?
I would know it, and I would be able to tell you at any moment. The limit, I believe, is 100 attendees.
Okay, and I just said that, just winged it out there. Okay. Because sometimes it's useful to know who is in attendance, but So for instance, if we had some public forum folks here, would you and they just wanted to listen, would you let us know that so-and-so was in attendance and so-and-so was here?
At each of these meetings, I've been very clear about who's been in attendance and when people joined. So, yes.
And I believe, Steve, on my screen over far to the right, there's a panelist tab and then there's an attendees tab. So on attendees, I can see Peter Finkel and I can see the phone number for Jeff.
Oh, I didn't know that you could see that as well. Okay, that's great. It's good to know.
Do you see that, Steve?
I see. Let me look here. No, I don't think I have that capacity.
You do, Steve. At the bottom of your screen, you need to click the participants tab to see that.
Oh, gotcha.
Yep.
And, you know, just worth noting, I can see every time Jeff wrestles around, his box lights up. It'd be wonderful if we could get that muted. Okay. All right. So let's move on to liaison reports. Steve, you're up on that.
Approval of minutes comes first, Andy.
Right at the top. Yes, absolutely. Did everybody get a chance to review the minutes? And could I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Good. Second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion's approved. Now we can go to liaison report, Stephen.
Good morning, everyone. So first off, we had an election. The results are in. Nobody's contesting the election in our little town, which is refreshing. I believe we have a solid new council. I'm just going to come out and say it. I think the new mayor has a pretty steep learning curve, and there's been a couple hiccups already, but hopefully she will see her way clear. The charter change is a whole new ball game for the city of Ashland relative to the powers of the mayor, relative to the city administrator. Just to be clear, that changeover happens on January 1st when we switch to that new format, which Dave Loveman has gone through the entire city charter, changing that language and setting us up for the new format. There's a pretty vigorous onboarding process over the next month with the new counselors that go through seminars, some learning, some ethics instruction, protocols, and so on and so on, which will be happening over the next month. And then it's on into 2021. I want to spend a little time this morning talking about the fire chief and the fire chief process, because there's a lot of information flying around out there. There's a lot of misinformation flying around out there. And it's disheartening to see groups in this town throw out judgment and positions and castigating the current city council. And they aren't even close to having the correct information. So I'm going to kind of help out with that this morning a little bit. It won't be long, but so we're looking for a new fire chief simply because Dave Shepard retired. The fire and ambulance service in Ashland is in flux right now. We just authorized an analysis to look at the ambulance service, to look at the fire service, from a budget standpoint, and see what makes sense and what we can afford. There's an active conversation with District 5 about some kind of a possible consolidation. It's common knowledge that the most expensive form of ambulance service is ambulance service that's delivered to a community by their own fire department. It's just the nature of the beast. It is expensive. Now, this kind of consolidation or these kinds of efforts to streamline fire and streamline ambulance is going on across the country. It's not unique to Ashland by any stretch. It's in every jurisdiction from Cal Fire to Montana Fire to all across the country. They're looking for ways because it is getting really, really expensive for municipalities to shoulder this responsibility on their own. So given that, it's going to be hard for Ashland to hire a fire chief who doesn't fall into one of two categories. The first category is somebody who has already retired from a fire department, who has the experience, who has the chops, but probably only has maybe 3 or 4 more years to go before they will fully retire. Not generally an ideal situation. The next one is you go to the other end of the spectrum, and it's going to be generally somebody who is looking to use Ashland as a career stepping stone. That is generally not an ideal situation. So, and then particularly the fact that we have this whole reexamination of our budget and fire service and ambulance service relative to the rest of the county really makes a potential fire chief reluctant. The common wisdom out there, we're not going to get the best and the brightest to come in a situation like that. So what we've come up with, and through the work of Adam Hanks and the fire district, Bob Horton, who's a young and vigorous fire chief over District 3, and a lot of conversations and a lot of networking and outreach, what we've come up with is plan. It's still kind of in flux right now, a plan to hire a gentleman out of Klamath Falls. I had interviewed him personally on Zoom. He is absolutely wonderful. He is young. He's an RN by training. He has absolutely turned around the District 1 over there in Klamath Falls, which includes the city of Klamath Falls. He's familiar with wildfire. He knows ambulance service backwards and forwards. Anyway, the long and short of it is he would be a great candidate, but he's reluctant to come here. He's right involved in Mount Ashland. His kids ski. They go every weekend to Mount Ashland. His kids are in high school. They ski on the race team and so on and so on. He loves Ashland. I just got in, and the counselors that interviewed him, everybody just had a great feeling. But we're not going to get him. The only way that we're going to get him is if he has some kind of – I get down the weeds here a little bit on this because I want people to understand this because there's a lot of chatter in the community right now about this. Is a District 3 really wants this guy too, but they don't have any room for him. But they will have room for him possibly 2 or 3 years down the road. What they have offered up is this plan to where they will hire him, and it's called an intergovernmental agreement that we essentially contract with District 3 to hire gentlemen from Klamath Falls to be the fire chief of Ashland for at least 2 years. He will come to Ashland. He will wear an Ashland uniform. He will be absolutely responsible to Ashland. He has no loyalties to District 3. He will do the best he can for Ashland. But District 3 provides what they call a backstop for his career, that if, in fact, it doesn't work out in Ashland, or we do a consolidation with District 5, or we go a different direction, then he has some place to go from a career standpoint. It's a win-win for everybody. We hope it comes to fruition. He's the perfect guy to see us through this deep dive we're doing into the ambulance and fire service. I've asked him specifically whether he can be even-handed on this and objective when it comes to looking at the numbers. And he's assured me he's done it in other places, and he has a great track record. So I'm going to say one more thing. When somebody says what somebody's salary is, there's two salaries. There's kind of a take-home, not take-home, but gross. And then there's what they call fully burdened. So for instance, if a laborer in the city of Ashland makes $45,000 a year, that's what they get on their paycheck, $45,000 a year. It probably costs the city somewhere around $90,000 a year when you include benefits and Social Security and PERS and workers' comp and the whole package, social matching, so on, so on, so on, so on. And they call that fully burdened. So the $90,000 would be fully burdened. But it's disingenuous for anybody out there to say that the labor of the city of Ashton makes $90,000 a year. But that information is kicked around out there when it comes to these higher paid positions, and it makes it seem like we're paying these exorbitant amount of money to these higher leadership positions when we're not. So please, when you see some of this information out there, the question you might want to ask yourself is this the gross or is it the fully burdened position? It seems like a small thing, but some things like that catch fire in this town and get a life of their own and so on. Okay, I'm done talking about fire. A couple other quick things. So we got a lot of stuff coming down the pike. We've got wildfire mitigation. We've got evacuation plans to fine tune, as you all well know. The sewer treatment plant is close to being paid off. We have to decide whether we want to pay it out of our own funds, which we can do, but it runs those funds down, or we borrow to pay it off. It's directly tied to the meals tax. So there's a lot of machinations going on around that. The good news from our new finance director, who is a very, very able person, I'm very impressed with her. The good news from Melanie is that the city is in not too terrible shape so far. And the projections are that we're not going to be in terrible shape. It's not great, but it isn't like we're going to go into receivership or bankruptcy by any stretch. So we're mainly talking about general fund, TOT, the transient tax, and the food and bev. So that's guardedly good news. Other things we're working on too is the winter shelter, the Presbyterian Church, the facility on East Main down by the LDS Church is no longer going to be operational. The Presbyterian Church has offered up Calvin Hall to be the winter shelter this year. Now I'm not talking warming shelter. I'm talking about the permanent 15-bed. I'm not exactly sure how many beds it is that Aura runs as kind of their wraparound program to house some folks and then try to work them through to get them out of a homeless situation into apartments and so on and so on. So that's going to be done at the Presbyterian Church, and that's a very generous and nice thing to have happen. Sandy?
What happened to the Presbyterian, the church on East Main? Why are they not functioning?
I'm not exactly sure what happened there. They had to shut down because of the COVID situation. I'm not exactly sure why that's not being reactivated. I can't answer that one. I don't know what happened there.
Do you think that there's a subsidy going to the Presbyterian Church to, to house these folks? Is that like a little side business?
From the city, you mean, or from some?
Yeah.
From,
well, I don't know, City Aura.
Right. The Aura is a nonprofit.
Right.
The ran it, yeah. I'm not down in the weeds on that one. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't. But I can. I'll get back to you on that.
Right.
Okay. Real quick here. And then of course the big elephant in the room is the budget process coming up, starting in January through June. One more last thing to talk about. We have annexed some new property. Raise your hand if you know where the property is that we've annexed, besides Aaron.
I can't remember.
Okay. So this is an odd sliver of property. So think of leaving town, going out under the railroad trestle, and then as you pass the animal hospital, you would look directly up the hill towards the railroad tracks, and between the railroad tracks, which slices across the top of that hill, and Highway 99 is a sliver of land, 16 acres, that we just annexed, or in the process of annexing, it looked like it's a go, into the city. And Aaron, help me out there. How many units do you recall is going to go in there?
So it's in flux, but I believe it's north of 200 to 250 units of workforce housing. It's called Grand Terraces. And the applicant has presented a concept plan, but hasn't formally gone through the site design review process. So some of that's going to remain in flux for a period of time, but it's going to be north of 200 units from my understanding. And that'll include a certain amount of affordable housing as well. And that obviously relates to the other ordinance that you guys addressed on Tuesday.
So some of this land use stuff gets kind of, you know, you get down in the weeds and it gets complicated, but it is pretty fascinating. And it's kind of cool. The city of Ashland, we're actually annexing a piece of property. It doesn't happen very often. And particularly the fact that there's a real focus on workforce housing is going to, you know, it's kind of exciting for the city of Ashland. And with that, that's a few of the bullet points of what we've got going on. And thank you for allowing me to do this. I feel like you guys continue to want to do that. And so I will do it until somebody tells me to tone it down a little bit. And then I'll do that too.
I consider it a high point of the meeting, Steve.
Oh,
always have. I love hearing your reports. And I think it's vital because, I mean, it puts everything into perspective for us. You know, we kind of, you know, we don't have the ability to act on anything that you generally talk about, but it's really important for us to have that background information because it does color the choices that we need to make. So I would continue with the degree that you've been delivering them. I really appreciate it.
You know, one of the things I want to say about the presentation, Andy, on Tuesday, it was very well received in the back halls, I can tell you that. And I got to tell you that the Public Arts Commission we get lots of commissions and we get reports. But the Public Arts Commission is high on the list of people that are getting things done. Some of these commissions, there's a lot, when all said and done, there's a way more said than done. And I don't think the Public Arts Commission falls into that category. And I continue to applaud the work that this group does and carry on. The council is impressed, I can tell you that. And that also helps out if somebody would challenge the funding on this thing. I think that the reports like Andy did and the work that you folks are doing kind of jerks the rug out from under any effort to try to do that. And so keep doing your good work.
Thank you. Joel Heller's up next. He's absent. I did text him this morning and ask him if he had anything he wanted to say. He did comment that the Japanese garden remodel is now underway. You may have noticed. There was Michael Black hosted a meeting on that a couple weeks ago that I attended. It was just a kind of a informative session to let people know this is going to be a long project. You'll see changes to Lithia Park. Pedestrian paths are altered. It's just, they're in it for the long haul. The trees will be protected. All good stuff. Let's see. He also said there wasn't a whole lot to report on, but as far as the ice rink goes, he just said that there's a really good chance that's not going to open this year just because they don't have the COVID situation makes it iffy. And short story is, don't expect to be able to ice skate this year. If it does happen, it would be a lovely bonus, but I wouldn't count on it. Aaron, would you like to report on your report?
Yeah, just a couple of items. One, to tag on to the remark about the Japanese garden, just to point out the extreme generosity of that gift. Apparently it also comes with an endowment for ongoing maintenance for a long period of time. So that's a huge project. And also just to touch base, since Steve brought up housing, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Garfield project between Quincy and Garfield. It received approval for a 70-unit development there, I believe last year, and they've finally submitted building permits and paid their plan review fee. So I would expect construction on that to start in a month or so. And that's another 70 units of housing. So that's exciting from a housing standpoint. From an item that is related to public art, I just wanted to let everyone know that we've received one submittal in response to the RFQ. And I keep an eye on that account every day. We haven't really discussed me keeping you up to date, Andy, in between, but I am watching that account regularly. And that's about all I had to add.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see. I do have outstanding questions. It was brought up about the question about email security and using having a dedicated email account. We're waiting for word on that, as well as our account balance. I still don't know how much we've got, but I want to be able to look forward and plan accordingly and want you all to know just what's in the pot. So I will share that with you all as soon as I find out. Project updates. The Power of Art voiceover. Steve, have you got any updates for us on that?
Well, the update is there's not much progress, and Tony's back from Denver, and I had an email exchange with him, and pretty much said, you know, in light of the freeze, we're not going to be doing any studio work, certainly in the short term. So the whole thing is kind of on hold right now. It certainly is not dead, but it's just kind of on hold. I'm going to lend some good energy to it, I hope, and I don't want it to be on hold too long. These things have a tendency to get stale if they get on hold too long, and people kind of have a tendency to lose their enthusiasm. And I don't, you know, I'm going to ride the wave on this one because it's such a nice thing that you folks have put together that I really want to help propel that forward. So anyway, that's all I've got right now. And, Tom continues to kind of want to be involved in it. I've embraced that. On the other hand, if he gets in the studio and they've got the wherewithal and they want to be the ones to might be the ones that are better positioned to align the soundtrack with the PowerPoint and so on. But I'll be monitoring that and hopefully act as a catalyst to move that along and hopefully have some good news next month. Hopefully this freeze doesn't last too long, but it's currently not looking all that great as far as people getting in the studio cheek to jowl and producing some kind of a audio track. I'm going to leave it up to Tony and the sound people to kind of tell us what they're comfortable with. And we've got to be a little careful on something like that. And Aaron might kind of give me a nod on this one. It's kind of a city function. It's not an official city function, but it is connected to the city. So we want to continue to be careful that we don't proctor or sponsor some little event like this PowerPoint production piece that flies in the face of the care that we're supposed to be not only exerting ourselves, but being a good example for the rest of the community. So there's that element too, that we can't just go wing off and try to squeeze this in an intemperate kind of a way.
I would just add one thing, Steve. While it might be on hold in the near term, if there's work that we can do in terms of having admins start the contract process, and the process of getting funds ready to be released, that is outside of my control because it's over an admin and might be a lengthy process. I have given a heads up to them that this is upcoming. But if we know who we're going to be hiring, and we know what the fee is, the sooner I can get that over to the admin side of the house, I would hate for the project to be held up at the point that we're ready to move forward with it.
I think that's a really good point. So I think what I will do on that note, let me get with Tony and just see what the initial initially what that looks like, try to get some costs, some rough cost ideas to see what we're dealing with. I think it's going to be less than $500. So it's not big.
There had been discussion about also securing a female voiceover person. Are we still pursuing that?
We are. So you're exactly right. There's definitely some work we can do that doesn't involve face to face, and that's a good point to get the preliminary work done on that so that it's not held up. I think that's a great point. I will work with you on that, and Andy.
I had a question. You know, once that work starts, and it's just something for you to keep in the back of your head. When they produce the sound file, is it going to be one huge file that includes everything that will need to be chopped up into smaller bits and inserted into the PowerPoint? Or are they planning on doing that sort of editing? Obviously, that's is a time-consuming part of the process. So in terms of keeping the cost down, whether we can absorb that part of the process internally and not have to pay money to do it versus paying.
Right. That was a work in process in progress. Tony seemed to think that individual sound bites was the way to go on that. And when he looked at the project, he said, this is really a piece of cake for their sound people there, that he didn't think it was going to be that, big and clunky and so on. So but that's a good point also, Andy, that to peel that off and as long as it makes sense, as long as it makes sense from a production standpoint that we try to do some of that ourselves.
Yeah. So I'm going to recommend that we seriously consider either Andy, who has experience peeling stuff apart, or Tom, because it really needs to be, the sound bites really need to be synced very closely to the slides. And I know Tom is capable and wanting to do that. Andy also feels capable of doing that. So I think just for, a good outcome, I would suggest that we consider keeping that in-house. I think there's just like a lot of adjustments that perhaps need to be made relative to how the slides appear. You're remembering some that end with a black hole that need to be cut back and so forth. So also, if we substitute other slides, it would be good to have the same person be doing these, substitutions. So I'm really highly recommending that we do keep that in-house.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Sandy, on that. The analogy is like a football team's long drive to the goal line, and then they ask for a replacement quarterback on the 1 yard line to finish and carry the ball across. Let's keep it with the people that put the work in. Stanley. Unmute, please.
I'm a little confused why COVID would prevent us from going forward. It seems like a recording studio is by design kind of socially distanced. And it seems like we could, pretty safely get this done.
Aaron, you could speak to that. I'm not sure if the rest of the commission understands the inability for example, for the MAP subcommittee to meet. Aaron, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I missed that was directed at me. Regarding the MAP subcommittee, I had a chance to speak with, and I probably should have mentioned this at my liaison report, sorry. I had a chance to discuss with Bill the details of how we were going to support the meetings for the artist selection, and that sort of dovetailed into how we could begin to start supporting the MAP meeting. And what we discussed was essentially we would notice it as we normally do with public meetings, and it would be conducted via Zoom. And what we would do is I would start the meeting and then hand off the host controls to one of you who is attending. My computer will remain logged on and will record it. And it, just like when we were doing subcommittee meetings in the community development building, we'll basically be doing the equivalent of giving you a room, handling the noticing, and then I'll leave the meeting and do what I need to be doing, and then be able to pass the recording along. So that is a new update that I probably should have shared at the top of the meeting. Sorry.
Jennifer.
I think Jeff wants to say something. Possibly. Related to the recording and COVID.
Jeff?
Yeah, that was my question. The voiceover, it seems like that could be done fairly safely. I don't know.
Okay. For those of you that don't know, one of the reasons why the MAP subcommittee has not met via Zoom is that the city expressed concern that it did not have the resources to help us with that. So as Aaron just described, they're working on a way that we can get together and do this. So just for those of you that may not have known why we haven't been able to meet. So I would move on to
just to point out, there are other subcommittees that are still not meeting. So the city is still actively working on spinning some of these things up. And it's been a bit of a process.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Regarding the map.
Andy, it looks like Steve would like to be recognized.
Oh, sorry. Steve, go ahead.
Just real quick to Stanley's point. Let me check with Tony. Let me check with the sound people on that point. It could be a concern that we'd express that is not a concern. I will be back with information on that so we can tighten this thing up and move that forward just as quick as we can.
Super. Regarding the MAP project, I don't have anything new to report on the progress on that. I think in my last month, I did mention that I did have a phone call with Jennifer Andrews, and you know, we talked about all the suggestions. She's taken that back to her artists. At that point, she said she thought she'd have final revisions for us maybe in 8 weeks. So that's maybe still in 2020, but we'll see how that goes. And regarding that MAP project, it's time for me to ask one of you if you would like to take my spot on it. I would like to spread the fun around. This is a fun project to work on. There's where we stand right now. I mean, we'll be seeing the five plaques fabricated. Dale Shostrom, who's historic chair, has made contact with various concrete installers and can oversee that portion of it. You know, all this should be happening maybe spring of next year. We'll see. But as it stands right now, the MAP subcommittee is made up of Dale, myself, Stanley, and Jeff. And with my acceptance of taking on the helm of Public Arts Commission, I would ask for somebody else to take over being chair of the MAP project. Would anybody be willing to do that? Don't all speak at once.
Yeah, I don't know. Hang on. For me, it's an issue of time. Let me think about it, Andy.
Okay. And Laura, you know, as we're waiting on your approval from the mayor, which I have absolutely no doubt we will get. And then, and I'm sure city council will approve this all. I say nothing's a sure thing, but my bet's on having that go forward. This would also be an opportunity where if you wanted to hop in on that, it would certainly get your feet wet in a big hurry. So maybe give that a little bit of thought. As I was describing, the fun part about this project that moving forward is, you know, we want to bring this project into all four of the historic districts. And, you know, right now it remains to be seen whether we want to fill out all the locations that have been designated within the railroad district before moving on into the other three districts. And, you know, phase one was just bronze plaques, but there's, you know, the potential to have these placeholders be something else that could be, you know, park benches, bike racks, you know, the world, I mean, we've got all sorts of possibilities. So it's a creative process, and it could be a lot of fun. And I would encourage somebody to share in the fun of it. I've certainly enjoyed doing it, but I think it's only fair to pass some of the fun around. So I hope someone will feel like that's what they want to take on. Enough said on that. Sandy, the map phase two project with the hub.
Yeah. So we sent out, or we have 200 contacts. So I guess I'm essentially saying we sent out 200 RFQs through SendinBlue. 94 were opened thus far. 32 people click through to the RFQ. And as Aaron told you, so we have one person that's really ambitious in there already. When I was looking at the invitation list, there were at least five artists from the Ashland area that have opened and clicked through to the RFQ. So that really bodes well for getting local talent. And so within 2 weeks, you know, the deadline arrives on December 7. So I want to run through, first of all, a schedule that I have put together for the entire project so that we know it'll be a macro view for everybody. And the dates that I have included are tied to dates that we already established as touch points in the, touch points in the process. So it's an aggressive schedule. And so I would like to start with this plan and schedule and then go to some individual conversations on various parts of it. So starting here, and as I said, this is a draft. If you see issues, let's talk about them now, because
I see right up front the date. You've got December 5th. It's actually December 7th, a minor point.
And I'm the person that drafted
Bingo.
That.
Bingo.
That should give you a lot of confidence in the quality of this document. But I don't know why I did that. All right. Thanks, Andy.
Yeah.
So the plan that I have in mind, based on the processes that the PAC has used in the past to vet applications. You know, I've taken what I believe to be the most successful parts of the processes and included them here. So the first thing is, you know, we've said in the RFQ that only complete applications will be accepted. So if someone leaves off, you know, their letter of interest or there's some incompleteness through, you know, that appears to be major, we're going to just set that application aside because, first of all, that speaks to the reading ability and, that of the artist, you know, that if an artist can't comply really well with the application, that bodes not so good for compliance down the line. So I'm going to take a couple of days from that Monday through Wednesday to run through the applications and pull out those that are not complete. And then Erin is going to pull together a packet of the complete submissions and the score sheets that I'll talk to you about in a minute. And when Erin and I had our last conversation, Erin, you were believing that you were going to do it all digitally. Have you had any further thoughts on that?
No, I was intending to compile PDFs and, you know, we'll need to break them up for file size potentially. But I was directed that we should do it digitally to prevent, you know, we get charged per copy with the machines that we use in the community development building. And we get charged more per copy for color pages. And in light of the fact that this could be many hundreds of pages, I was directed that we handle this via PDF.
Well, I think that makes sense too, because of the slides. Otherwise, you know, you'd have to do a separate way to get the slides to everybody. So, all right. Then I've allocated from December 10th to December 14th for the PAC. And I think the 10th may be a Friday for all of us to score all of the submissions. And then I've put forward two dates for us to talk about them via Zoom. On the first date, which I'm proposing to be the 15th of December, we will review the score sheets, look at all the images, just a whole first pass together, set the cut score of, you know, where we want to arrive at for the first cut of finalists, and then agree on who meets that score. Then I've set proposed a second meeting for the 18th to go through the first cut of finalists and agree on five finalists.
Sandy, I wanted to clarify that meeting is separate and apart from the standard PAC meeting, which is also the same day.
I was thinking we might do just that on the PAC meeting, but I'm open for Andy, your
input on that. I would suggest adding that as an agenda item for a regularly scheduled meeting, as long as we're able to do that, Erin.
Well, it's going to take a long time to go. I mean, depending upon how many we get, but you know, if we get 30 submittals, it's going to take the better part of the meeting to do that. So if you don't want to dedicate a whole meeting to that, then we'll just set a separate meeting day.
Let's evaluate that. Once we see the closing date of submissions, and then we'll be able to make a better decision at that point.
Sure. You might want to consider putting out an alternative date at this moment so people can reserve it. So we can talk about that. Okay. So, you know, we've agreed via the RFQ to fund three finalists, but the schedule of getting to three finalists includes a time for checking references. And it's possible that if we only have three and references don't come back so good, we're stuck without a full three. So I'm suggesting at least five, and I'm open to more if you want to, as we go through, to select as finalists, and then based on the references coming through, nail it down to three. Any questions so far on this schedule? Okay, then on, so I've allocated from the 18th of December to the 6th of January for a couple of us to call the references. And then on the 8th of January, schedule a meeting and decide on the three finalists. Notifying the finalists on the 15th and scheduling phone calls with them, with the finalists as we notify them on that day. And then I've thrown in a unknown at the moment in terms of the date for a contract and dollar allocation to the finalists. And I've been pursuing that with Aaron and Bill Molnar to get that nailed down. And then we're going to be working on the selection panel between now and then. And I'm suggesting that we need to finalize the selection panel by the 12th of February. The design submissions from the three finalists are due the 5th of March. And I think the process in the past has been for the PAC to review those design submissions before we send them to the panel. And if for some reason we deem them inappropriate, it's our purview to not put them before the selection panel. So on 3-8, I'm suggesting that we need to do that. And then the selection panel can meet sometime between the 9th of March and the 12th of March. And that date is tied to the city council meeting, which is the 16th of March. And then notifying the finalists on the 18th and, you know, however we go from there. Scheduling a conversation with the artist and then getting the contract and the dollars out to the selected artist. Does that make sense? Does that sound like a doable schedule to everybody?
I think so.
Any questions about that schedule? I am wanting today, before we adjourn, to nail these dates for you to put on your calendar that I've spoken about, the selection meetings and so forth, so we can go back through those again. But I'd like to now move on to the criteria for evaluating the submissions that we get in. And you have that document in front of you as well. So I've pulled the criteria exactly off the RFQ, and that's the beginning of the whole process for both we as a PAC and the selection panel and eventually the city council. So the criteria that we've established are professional qualifications, proven artistic merit and excellence of prior relevant work, placemaking experience, you know, relating to a site-specific artwork, placemaking experience with original artistic vision, original being a key word here, experience fabricating or contracting with a fabricator and installing permanent artwork suitable for the outdoor environment, experience working in a collaborative process in a public setting, and that's, we'll pick that up when we talk to the references, as well as proven project management experience working within a contract and communicating in a timely, consistent manner. And that will be a really important question to chat with the references about. So here's what each part of the submission should speak to. And once we agree on all the scoring criteria, I'm going to develop a matrix that's going to have this on it so that it will be a great reference point. And that will come out digitally with the submissions. So first of all, the letter of interest should answer why an artist and artist-led team is interested in the project and demonstrate why the team or the artist is appropriate for this project. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
And so the criteria, the scoring is, if you think that they've just minimally met that criteria, the scoring will be 1 point. If it's pretty interesting, or they seem pretty interested and pretty qualified, 3 points. If they're really keenly interested and very qualified, 5 points. And that's kind of how it will move throughout the scoring process, with one exception. So then comes the artist statement, and it should address an approach to public art that we find compatible with our expectations for the hub artwork. For instance, their work needs to be creative, or they need to speak about their creativity. It needs to be contemporary, meaning the art of this time, created now, you know, in the last 10 years, I think we have stated, needs to be original, and it needs to be site specific. So there again, the scoring is the same. Minimally in line with what we expect, moderately in line, or statement very compatible with what our expectations are. The professional resume should include either their art education in art, design, and engineering, or equivalent competency based on their work history. Not everybody is going to have, you know, a master's in art, but I think it's fair for a $30,000 project to not be so strict as if we were looking at a $110,000 project. So if they can show competency based on their work history, then I think that's what we should judge them on. We also want to see past projects that demonstrate knowledge of working with materials for an outdoor setting. We want to see projects that demonstrate technical competence in fabrication and installation of permanent artwork. So even thinking if a artist contracts with a fabricator, one would assume that the artist would do all the drawings. And so that is where the demonstration of technical competency should show itself. Projects that have been completed within the past 10 years and are similar in scope and in the $25,000 to $50,000 range, demonstrated experience working within the public process, work that demonstrates an original voice and that is sensitive to each project site. That's, you know, really a biggie for me. So I thought it is appropriate to score each of these points. I was thinking it's impossible to develop a score when you take into consider everything. So that's why I have suggested that each one of these points, which is, you know, pretty critical, have its own score. And Okay, and then there's a general overall score. Individual scores, and then one general score, just such as every other section, where the criteria overall, you're looking at their professional resume, and you think, well, the criteria has been minimally met, moderately met, or significant number of creative, relevant projects and experience. Last is the image list and the images, and that should help us evaluate if an artist or artist-led team's projects are not very exciting, not very relevant, pretty creative, or really relevant, very creative projects. And then I just developed some questions. Oh, let me stop right here and ask if there are questions or concerns or confusion on this scoring process. Everybody good? Terrific. Okay. Then I just developed some questions to use for verification of the professional references. And we have in the past always tried to speak with a reference, not taken, because I think you can pick up so much in intonation from speaking to a person that they have experienced good project management skills from an artist, working within the contract, communicating in a timely manner, which in the past has always been a dicey thing, and completing projects on time and within budget, and successfully collaborated with a reference on projects similar in scope and cost range. So, you know, if we get down to five, however many we determine we're going to have as finalists, if it's five, if it's six, however many you wish to do, and we'll figure that out as we go through the scoring process, then I'm going to suggest that maybe two of us volunteer to split the list and do those personal calls. And there's, I think I've allocated about 20 days to do that in. And I know that's, you know, going to be tough over the Christmas holiday or with COVID or whatever the heck, you know. So we may just have to be really creative to make that work. Okay. Andy, do you want to talk about the selection panel and the criteria now? And then I'll go back to the postcard and the application.
Yeah, that sounds good. In your packet, you'll see the selection panel page. My description was really pulled from the project early on. It's probably too lengthy, and Sandy suggested we just put the project intent that's on the RFQ, and that makes perfect sense. Make it concise, simple. Perhaps they don't need to know the scope of the huge project. What we need to talk about is how to select, how to engage the process of this selecting the selection panel. And Sandy has written a first draft of the notice. What we need to do is we need to send them out to all the properties within 300 feet. Aaron has, let me see his... I can share. It's looking for my screen.
It's set up so all panelists can share the screen. So okay. You should be able to do that.
All right.
Hang on. Now you should be able to do that. Sorry.
I was looking for the... The map of the area that you shared with us.
I can pull that up if you can't.
Let's see. Got it here in just a sec.
Okay.
All right. Am I successfully sharing that screen?
Nope.
No, we're not seeing it.
Okay. How about now? Still no?
Why don't I just go ahead and do okay. it? I've just pulled it up here. Yep.
Okay.
Sorry that didn't work. You should have had the ability to. This is an image from Jackson County Property Data's. This is the tool we use for land use notification. And so it's showing a 300-foot radius around the subject property and all of the highlighted properties, which I believe there are 79 of, will get mailings. Now, there's some that are going to be deleted from that. For instance, there's going to be multiple parcels that have same ownership and the common areas for the HOA. Those sort of duplicates will get removed so that we'll only send it to property owners.
Aaron, why is it an oval shape when it's when we're talking about a 300-foot radius?
So if you imagine going around that parcel of land and drawing a 300-foot line from every point to every direction you can, as you work around the corner, it's going to create a radius, right? That's why it's ovaled. It's reflecting the exact shape projected out 300 feet.
Okay, I guess I don't understand why it looks like some of the neighbors living on B Street, you know, the flat parts of the oval look like it should extend out. But if
well, again, visualize the subject property and imagine drawing a 300-foot line every direction you can from every point on the shape, right?
Yeah, but it's pretty clear that if you go the distance between Railroad Park and going, I'm going to say east, is greater than the distance between Railroad Park and going south.
That's simply not true.
Is it not true? Okay. It's just an optical illusion. Is that what you're saying?
So this is using GIS. And again, you know, if you visualize going to every point, like imagine if you put a straight line at the northwest corner and you sweep it around, you're going to get that curve, right?
Okay.
Oh, so you're not going from the actual site of the
From the
artwork.
Perimeter of the property. That's correct.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. Not from the point of where the statue is going to go, but rather from the perimeter of the entire subject property.
Got it.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So let me see here. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you still want to see that?
No. You know, Sandy's, as I said, put together a notice. I think, can we have that page shared with everybody, please? Great, thank you. So I've looked it over. I think it's short and sweet and to the point. And you know, I think we should get these postcards out right away. Does anybody have any suggestions on changes to that?
So can you do a separate extension to the city website to go for an applicant to go directly to the application, Aaron?
To this application?
Yeah.
Well, if we're physically mailing them, it probably won't be a postcard. It'll probably be an 8.5 by 11 in an envelope because that's how we do all of our mailings. So if we can integrate it, they'll have the application in their hands when they receive the mailing, right?
I was going in a different direction. I thought they were going to go online and fill it out. Okay.
Well, I suppose we could. I mean, we would need to set that up and do it, but I was,
either way is fine.
Sure.
Well, Aaron, the code says we're required to post notices in three ways. We mail, it says mail postcards. It says post the notice on the city's webpage. And then what was the third one?
Webpage, newspaper, and the mailing. Exactly. I mean, I would suggest that we could simply, first of all, if we could use the public art email address, that would be helpful. And
okay,
can we simply ask them to email publicart@ashland if you're interested? Because that would make it very simple. I mean, out of the 79 properties, I think it's pretty likely that we aren't going to get that much pull. And that might make it simpler to simply say email publicart@ashland if you're interested and tell us why. I mean, or but we can certainly do it this way as well.
I think we need a definite application someplace. Okay. I mean, obviously you're not going to put it in the newspaper. So people who read the newspaper have got to have a way to apply. And okay. All right. So
Does it sound like the group wants to have a dedicated landing page like we did for Hub RFQ, and it could be / Hub selection panel?
Yep.
Yes, please.
Okay. I'll work on that.
Okay.
And I think those two questions in the application are just enough. Does anybody see the need for additional questions?
And let me just comment on why they're pretty loose. I wanted them to be friendly and approachable, you know, for the benefit of the pack, so that someone doesn't come there and find out, oh, this is tough. What are they thinking? You know, I want people to be able to sign on and write us back, and we can select, you know, based on that.
So could I ask then if the group would be able to, would someone be able to create the application as a PDF that has these questions in two fields, so that way when they go to the landing page, they can download that PDF, enter their data, and then email that PDF to us? Is that possible?
Yes, I could have that done for you immediately.
That'd be great, Andy.
Okay.
The other part of this, of my strategy, is when Andy starts talking about possible invitees, I'm going to suggest that in addition to the 79 properties or whatever, that there probably are additional people who don't fit into that exact category. Like, I don't know if Dale Shostrom is in that category. And, you know, there are others that you see on the list that Dan, that Andy has created. So I'm proposing that we get their addresses and ask Aaron to send directly to those folks as well. Does that sound okay to everybody?
Yeah, and you could simply, once the application is complete, you can email that directly to parties you're wanting to invite. I mean, the code appears to give you broad latitude in how you put together the selection committee. So once we have that application complete, for those parties who you want to invite to participate, you could simply email them that PDF with the same instruction to return a completed application to publicart@ashland.
Okay. Well, we'd have to have an invitation too. I mean, you know, like the postcard invitation. Invitation is not the right word, but you know what the heck we were doing, why, what it's all about. So, Andy, you might need to create two applications or just duplicate it, but we can talk about that.
Well, I saw Jennifer's hand up, by the way.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Sure. I just want to, I'm coming into this late and still a little confused by it. Just being that I'm new. And if I was to get this postcard, I'm a little confused on exactly what's happening. So I'm hoping there is a link on this postcard that will explain a little bit more about what this project is. This is very This is so minimal that it can be seen as confusing with what's already in the railroad park right now. So we need to first off set the precedent that this has been in the making for long before May, that it's something I think you're doing in conjunction with the Historic Commission.
Okay.
So if there can be a link to a description of the project more so than just the sentence on this card.
Well, take a look at your take a look at your packet attachments, and in the previous page it says selection panel railroad park hub artwork November 9th, 2020 project intent. That's quite verbose.
So can that be added, or is there I'm just talking about for the people who receive this information, if they need more information, where will they find it?
Yeah, my suggestion would be to have that all, I wouldn't want them necessarily to have to go searching for it. So if you feel that, you know, this information is key in their understanding, then let's adapt that into the PDF that they'll be mailed.
Andy, was it not your intention that this page that's in our packet was going to mail with the postcard, or no?
It was my intention. It was just a first draft to run past everybody to see what you thought about it.
So there is another page. I'm just, because we're looking at this screen, I don't want to exit the screen. But if there is another page, maybe Aaron can share it, the page that's intended. I would just love to see what's the full package being sent to these people in this location.
That page is in your packet, Jennifer.
All right. Well, then I will exit my screen.
Yeah, I don't have a digital copy handy right now. I was asked to have these files handy.
That's fine.
So, and Jennifer, I kind of took the page when you get to it, and I reorganized the page a little. In fact, Andy, maybe you could, you know, either you or I should send that out. Because now if it plays a major part in providing an understanding of the project, it would be great for everybody to look at. I also updated the project intent because it has morphed from the time when this page was created to, you know, the exact project intent of this project. So we can do that. Huh?
Well, Sandy, unless I misunderstand you, what you're asking me to share with everybody is what I prepared and exists in the packet attachments.
So I sent you,
excuse me, go ahead, Jennifer.
No, you go ahead, Sandra.
I sent you a rework of it. Did you not see that?
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
I just want to ask, so this is great. So this selection panel railroad hub artwork will be sent in an envelope with this other information to everyone within that area, correct? I'm just getting a thumbs up or down.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Good. That's all.
I have a question.
Yes, Jeff.
Is the selection committee only coming from that radius?
No. We have.
Okay.
We have the ability to invite people, and one of the emails that you should have gotten from me, I think I sent a couple of them, was to, I am interested in hearing any suggestions you have for possible invitees. You can see on this page, under possible invitees, you see the list I compiled. I would like the commission's input on adding to that list.
Okay, I just have one name I'd like to add when it's appropriate, or however it's appropriate, when the time is appropriate.
Andy, in addition, I would like to note for Jeff's benefit, or I guess all of ours, that since this ad will be placed, the ad that we create will be placed in the paper, it will be a community available opportunity. community-wide opportunity, I should say.
Yes. Okay.
Can I stop sharing the screen now?
Yes. Thank you. Can everybody look at that page in your packet that has possible invitees? I would be interested to hear if people had suggestions on who we should add to that list. Anybody have a?
I have somebody in mind. If it's appropriate to.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Should you want me to hear? Give you his name.
Please.
Okay, his name is Art Van Kraft. Art. VanKraft. And he's a prominent citizen here of Ashland.
Okay. Does anybody else have suggestions?
I told you that Carlos Delgado would be a good choice, and I'm not sure if you added him to your list or not.
I did not yet.
And I would also suggest that you pull Bruce Bayard, who served on the Threshold panel, who was one of the originators of this commission and is a near distant neighbor to this project.
Yeah, Bruce would be great, actually. So I may be able to come up with a couple names, but let me think about it.
Jennifer?
I just have a question. So looking at the circle, it's a lot smaller than I really realized as far as the railroad district. I always think it's important to think about the business community in that region. So there's Chozu Baths, specifically. There, if we move out of that circle, there is a really prominent architect who's right down the street. There is the used furniture, amazing used furniture store across the street from Noble.
That's Stacy, and I think her name's already on the list, isn't it?
Yeah. Right.
Good.
And Jennifer, that was not the image that we were looking at was not the entire railroad district. That is simply with 300-foot radius around the subject property.
All right. So we can ask others.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Or, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I think it's important to get the people within the space and some business people at least asked. So I will kind of think, I don't know these people, but I think there's some people who might be potentially good.
Jennifer, to bring you up to speed on the business that you speak of is called Revive.
Yes.
And it's in the Haskins garage building. So that is there will be a plaque going in the sidewalk right in front of her business. And she is the only person that came to the MAP subcommittee and expressed her concern that installation of the plaque not negatively impact her business. And so we've been in steady communication with her that, yes, we'll totally work within the parameters to make it all work with her business. So I think she's a great choice for the selection panel. She's expressed an interest in it. She's excited about the project. It's going to be on her front door. I totally agree with you. And she's excited about the project. Sandy.
And Jennifer, I at one point found the name of the architect on the corner of 3rd and A, and I've now forgotten it, but you're so right. He's should definitely be included.
Anybody else?
I believe his name's Chris Brown.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Laura. my neighbor expressed an interest in being on the selection panel too. And it was interesting because I said, well, we'll be posting this and you can fill out an application and go through that process. And I said, This is, by the way, why do you want to be on the selection panel? And he said, well, because I have an excellent eye for art. And I said, okay, I appreciate that. Just a clarification. The job of the selection panel is, we're not asking you whether you like or dislike the piece. Be clear that what we're asking of you is to evaluate how well that piece fits in with the criteria for the project. So that's a distinction I think everybody should be aware of as we make these choices.
You know, that is always a concern, and I kind of wrestled with myself about whether to make a statement in that regard, just as you've clearly done, Andy. So I don't know whether it's important to do it up front, whether it's important to do it when we talk to these people and you get a sense, because, you know, we can chat with everybody that we deem a good prospect. And I can tell you in the past, some of the panels have been, or some of the panelists have been less successful than others, just because they couldn't deal with the fact that, it's not whether I like it or not. So I don't know. That's a point that we should figure out. What's the optimum point that we talk to these people? Maybe it's on the application. We stated on the application. Let's do that. That makes sense to me now that I'm saying it out loud.
Yeah, we can still make the application friendly. And yeah, it, all this talk about your scoring system for the artwork and things like that, I'm reminded of what Gordon Huther said when we had the dedication ceremony. He said, man, I'm here to tell you, public art is not for wimps. And it just stuck with me that, you know, yeah, he said, you know, I've come up, I did the song and dance for you guys on three separate times. You know, this is a lengthy process. I've been doing this for 30, 35 years. And that's exactly what I told my neighbor, about public art. He had commented about how he had his own ideas for the theater corridor project. And I said, well, you know, there was a process to submit applications for that, you know, and let me tell you, it's not for wimps. So, you know, I think we want to be friendly about it, but yeah, I think it's fine to be upfront and say, you know, this is what you'll be evaluating it on.
Good.
How about a deadline? Can we set some dates, some expectations on how soon we can get this notice out and how much time we want to give the community to respond before we close the application process?
I would like at least a week and a half.
Okay. For what? A week and a half before you send them out? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I have to coordinate with Dana's resources. She's Dana, who lends staffing support for things like noticing, is one of the people who was reduced in our department to a half FTE and is now splitting her time with legal. So I have to be careful in not overcommitting to what they can support.
Okay.
So if we aimed to send out the notice to the newspaper, to the relevant property owners, say by December 2nd, is that acceptable to the group?
Works for me. Anybody object?
Okay. And that's predicated on getting the materials that I need to post online, let's say no later than Wednesday of next week. Andy, sure. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. And how much time do we want to give the community to respond? I would say my suggestion would be 3 or 4 weeks. What do you think?
Are we, Aaron, are we just posting it once in the newspaper?
Yes.
Or multiple times?
I need to check on that. I believe when we put a posting in the newspaper, it may run more than one day, but it's probably a fixed period of time. It'll be the same length of time that we do notices in the newspaper for any public hearing.
That's only one day.
I would make it 2 weeks. I think it will be forgotten if it's not tightened in its due date.
Okay.
So that would make the due date, if we send it out on December the 2nd, making the due date for applications to be received as December 16th?
Sure.
Once again, a really tough time for people.
I believe from the schedule that Sandy showed that we don't have to finalize the selection committee until, wasn't that in February, Sandy?
February 12th, I have.
So maybe there's a benefit to waiting until the new year to send out these notices so they don't get lost in the holidays.
Sure.
Let's do that.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, so with that said, looking at January... the 4th is the first Monday in January. Would that be an acceptable? Well, maybe we buffer it out to the 5th, which is a Tuesday. That gives me a little bit of slack there.
Sure.
And then are we still comfortable with a 2-week period? So it would be January 19th is the deadline to apply?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do that. Okay.
That'll give me more time too.
Yeah, that's great.
Let's coordinate that to be sure it's before our January meeting, so we have a chance to talk about it then. What is our January meeting date?
Probably.
Fifteen.
Yeah, the 15th. Okay, so that deadline needs to work for that. So when do you want them in so that we could talk about them on the 15th? Do you want to do any, are you going to do any vetting or what? I don't have a process in mind for selecting the selection panel.
Well, if you wanted to have them for the January 15th meeting, the deadline would need to be no later than the 14th, obviously, which is cutting it tight because I'll need to turn things around for you guys. And that would mean mailing on New Year's Eve for a 2-week period.
Do that?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said, Andy.
Can you do that? I agree that you say our meeting is the 15th.
Correct.
Okay. So deadline should be like the 13th then. So
mail on December the 30th, deadline on the 13th?
Yeah. So
that's good.
Can we do that?
That works for me.
Okay.
And can you put it in the newspaper maybe after the beginning of the year rather than that?
Yep, that sounds good.
And can it be posted on the news and info section on the city's landing page?
That was always a plan.
Okay, perfect. Okay, we are... rapidly running out of time here. I think, does anybody else have anything to add about this selection panel process? I think we've pretty much run the gamut on this. Okay, then I will close that and move on to the next item. Jennifer, I had asked you to meet with Peter, and the document that you shared with me that's in your everybody's packet has some great ideas. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah. So Peter and I met, had a delightful conversation, and we have many ideas about expanding the awareness of public art. We realize that right now in COVID, there's so many that we could be doing it all. But right now in COVID, there's a few that seem realistic. And so the last page of your packet, if you wish to look at it while I sort of read through it, I think it's important to sort of read through it to have you think a little bit. And especially if someone can't see the packet, I want to make sure it's on the record. And then we could, I don't know if we have time to talk about things, but at least let's put this out there. So two things we found were really doable. One is making presentations, which we've already talked about. And obviously right now that would be presentations through Zoom, eventually to be presentations in person. And so the first question we have for the commission is anyone interested in doing these talks? Peter has expressed that he might be interested and willing. And I think it's good to have, if it's a large group, two people. So it could be Peter and a commissioner, or it could be that a commissioner goes to a presentation with a specific artist who's made creative work for the Public Arts Commission. So first question to all of you, is anyone interested in doing that? If we also thought about, if an artist did participate, can we offer them a stipend? So this is a question perhaps for us. In chapter 2.29.180, it talks about how funding can be spent for educational purposes. So I guess for us, we wanted a legal clarity being requested here. Can we pay an artist a small stipend? And would we as a commission want that? Next, we were curious on if we go to the Rotary, maybe they're going to invite us to their Zoom meeting, but also can we, without Aaron, do Zoom meetings or have these meetings without, do we as a commission doing presentations have right to Zoom account presentations?
Jennifer, excuse me, I'm having a hard time hearing you. Could you bump up your sound a little bit?
That better?
Yes, thank you.
Sorry. Shall I repeat anything, Sandra?
Just the last sentence or question about Rotary. What, I didn't hear what you said about that.
And can we, without Aaron having to be present, can we control Zoom meetings? That's a question. Do we have access to city Zoom?
I don't believe that's a service that's going to be made available to outside of city staff.
Okay.
So at a certain point when you get to discussion, I can give you input on that.
Okay, great. So our initial thoughts are, if we do these public presentations, we would use the wonderful newly created slideshow, maybe a shortened version, so that we could talk about it, and then we would go into perhaps a local artist or an idea about something within our community. We would also want to share the website. So we have this website that has all of this public art on it. And as you can see on the Expanding the Awareness of Public Art page, it says see number 2. So I think I need to add and say that our second way that we want to expand the awareness of public art is by actually fixing up this website a bit. So adding and improving information on the website. So a few questions about that I have for you. Who manages the content of this website? What is the process of getting things added or changed? So Peter and I talked about there perhaps a two-phased approach to the website changes. Phase one could be Peter is willing to add a small blurb to things that currently show up on the plan but have no information. And our question is, how do you as a commission feel about adding a link to articles by Peter that go to his website and give more information? So we as a commission should think about that, and gay or nay, it should just come from us. So if we don't want that connection or that link, he could also create a file and have it linked to another page on the city website. And like I said, Peter is also willing to make an abbreviated version of his articles to put on the website, but also it's really nice to keep the articles in their original state, but we need to discuss that. So that's phase one, and I'm not going to go much farther because of time, but phase two is actually just sort of defining what is public art here? And how much of this can we put on our site? For instance, there's a lot of public art in the city schools. There's public art at SOU. There's municipal works inside the library. How far do we go as a commission? And so we talked about that candidly, and I think we as a commission should visit that. Perhaps that's something we need to move forward in the new year. And another question I have is there a spreadsheet that lists all of the public art in Ashland? And if not, we should probably do this. Aaron.
So just to answer a couple of those questions, taking the last one first. There's a couple of different files on the web, on the file server that purport to be inventories of the city's public art. The most recent one that I have seen is dated 2010, and I believe even then it was not comprehensive. I think the most comprehensive document of the city's public art inventory is currently the GIS story map. And to answer your earlier question, that is managed by the GIS department. And the process to get things added or changed would be to go through me, and I would put it on Leah's list of things to do. And obviously that, doesn't percolate to the highest priority of, but they, you know, get to it as they can. And I'm more than happy to provide the versions of the public art inventory that I have. They certainly need to be updated. But there is not currently a comprehensive inventory that is up to date.
Thank you. Can you clarify for me what GIS means?
GIS stands for Geographic Information System. It's a shorthand for any mapping that is being done digitally, basically.
Thank you.
Jennifer, I want to comment just real briefly. At a previous map meeting, Leah Richards, who manages that those tasks, came in and presented to us. And so the plan for the map project was to have that eventually incorporated into a story map. And it makes all the sense in the world to have Peter's articles incorporated into the story map for public art. So we support that.
So maybe, I guess, two questions to finish out our time today. Is anyone else interested in doing talks to people, to clubs? Anyone interested in doing Zoom presentations? Let me just ask that.
I would be happy to be in the pool.
So would I.
So Andy and Jeff?
Anybody else?
How, I think for now, let's ponder, and maybe we ought to find the questions about funding an artist to consider in the future. But maybe right now the smartest move is to think about a website. So I guess the big question I had is, how do you all feel about Peter Finkel's participation or his links to his articles? Is there a legality here? Is it okay? And also, how do you feel about him being willing to add some verbiage to things that seem missing?
I'll just answer the one question. I don't think there's any problem with having a link that goes from the story map to Peter's page. I don't think that's problematic. I will ask and see if it raises any red flags, but it seems perfectly appropriate to me.
His articles are really fantastic. So if we can do that, I strongly support it.
Great. So, okay. Awesome. Jeff, do you have any thoughts?
Not at the moment.
So I think at this point, Aaron, I'll just make sure that it's cool. I'll wait for your approval. And then if so, then I'll let Peter know that he can work on his linking. And now I'm realizing that he and I and you will have to give you content to give to Leah.
Correct. That's
and
correct.
And if he wants to add small quips about things that have nothing written, are we all okay with that as well? So Peter's on fire. Should we just let him be on fire and enjoy doing at least what's there for now?
How does that support that?
Okay.
And what, just one word on that, Jennifer. I'd prefer a single download rather than multiple.
Yeah, every day. Okay, yeah. So chunks of chunks. I'll put the word chunk here.
Chunks
of data. And then the, so something to just think of in the future, it's a last little bullet there, is really part of phase two as well. And that is just really how big can this site be, and how much, how, what is public art, and what are we in charge of advertising yet? We want to celebrate it all. Peter thought of a great idea. Rather than recreate the folder that early we didn't recreate in the beginning anyway, he was suggesting a rack card, which would be have a QR code, could be put in the chamber, could be elsewhere. It's much more affordable and cheaper to make. And that rack card would go to this beautifully made website. So just something to think about, and we can talk about that more in the future.
Yeah, and I just make a real quick point if I could. Jennifer, you raise a good point that there's a lot of art in town that may not necessarily be formally part of the city's art inventory. And that is a tricky thing to stick handle around. So.
Right. Yeah. So I think it bodes for another time of discussion. I think right now we'll have Peter really kind of gussy up what we have, but then some point there could be a lot of work that we need to consider as this part of our purview. And just to remind you all, it is in your packet, but public art means all forms of original works of art in any media that have been planned and executed with specified intentions of being sited or staged on city property or on property owned and controlled by the city of Ashland, usually outside and accessible to the public. So that might give us a lot of answers or a place to start when we really go into, do we want to feature some murals at schools? Maybe the schools are just out of our purview. I'm not sure. Whether SOU fits into that, whether the library maybe does, because I think that is a city property. I know there's art within the court rooms or court spaces. So it's a future conversation.
Yeah. I think it's somewhat complicated because the public art for the commission is art that has been approved by the city council and sits within our collection that has met our parameters. And so now what does it say if we go out and we classify something as public art that has not been through the process, may not meet our specifications? So that's where I think that we need to have a conversation.
Absolutely. And there are some things missing, like the power boxes. There's nothing on the website about all the power boxes, and those were created through the public. So there are things missing, and then there's also things that certainly are perhaps outside of our purview. So exactly, I agree, Sandra.
Thank you. Wrapped up on that, Jennifer? Okay. Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you guys brainstorming on that. When I asked for input last month on that, I was absolutely thrilled to see you guys get on it right away. So big kudos for that. Thank you. On other business, as it was mentioned, I did give the report to City Council. One of the things that is kind of brewing on the pack burner is in the packet, I included the racial equity resolution, and they make reference to public art possibilities in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement, a mural, and in my report to City Council, I made sure to let them know that the process to achieve those goals is all listed in the ordinance that we operate under, as well as the document that Sandy had a large part in developing about the guidelines for the mural. So those things are available, and you know, whoever whoever in the community is working towards the t-shirt display, you know, they've got access to see how they can develop ideas towards making something permanent if that's what they want to do. Some of you may have seen that there was a newspaper article on this display, and I'll quote it real quickly. It said, City Attorney David Lohman said the Public Arts Commission and others have shown interest in organizing a permanent railroad park installation to replace the temporary display, which would involve, at minimum, coordination from the legal and parks department. All come under consideration. Lohman cautioned that questions about funding and sponsorship, project management, and staffing will all come under consideration as the project progresses. Gina Duquesne supported moving forward on culturally representative public art displays throughout the city as a way of enhancing a statement of love and acceptance. She recommended a commission be formed to ensure action items are implemented in line with perspectives of people of various races and allow the actions within the resolution to remain flexible. So Dave, at the city council meeting, Julie Akins asked me if there was that newspaper article definitely kind of alludes to the fact that there are things moving forward on our public art end. And as you all know, that's really not the case just yet. We're certainly ready and willing to hear proposals and stuff, but up until now, that's has not happened. And Dave is communicating with some of the folks that are want to have that display organized. And so we're just going to kind of, they need to do their homework and figure out what's appropriate about a site and funding and all that stuff before we can really act on it. Does it, Sandy?
So one of the things that Steve Jensen and I talked about is, in this particular instance, due to the nature of the t-shirts, for instance, it could be an indoor installation in a public building. It does not have to be outdoors. So I just wanted to put that out there. If you have any conversations, you guys have any conversations with this group, it could be something that's installed where the city council meets in that foyer out there.
Yeah, that's a great place for it. I do know that there are some issues. Dave Lohman talked to me. We had about a half hour discussion about the possibilities for this. And there is a stipulation in the law about, I'm drawing a blank on the exact terminology, but for example, at the plaza, where the women in black would stand and where, you know, people supporting candidates would stand and hold up signs. That is apparently an acceptable spot for public forum, whereas the city has to, as I understand it, has to grapple a little bit with coming to terms with whether the railroad park fits into that same definition. So, as I said before, there's things that are in development, but there's a lot of work that has to happen before it's going to come rolling across our desks. And I really look forward to hearing proposals, and I think there's some great things that can happen, and I just really look forward to seeing where that goes. There was another interesting situation that I just want to clue you guys in on. The Parks and Rec Department contacted me and let me know that there was a citizen who wanted to make a donation of a sculpture and have it placed in Lithia Park. And Parks and Rec said, you know, we turn this over to you guys first to figure out the process and if it's acceptable. And then we would await your recommendations. So I met with the donor, and the sculpture that she wanted to donate is a lovely piece. But as I started doing my due diligence in finding out more about the artist and the piece, I was aware of the fact that there were 7 or 8 duplicates of the same sculpture around the nation. And in some cities, they're already installed as part of their public art collection. So under our municipal code that we operate under, it clearly said that we can only accept a donation if the artist agrees not to make duplicates. Go ahead, Stanley.
Yeah, I had thought that we have been prohibited from placing any sculpture whatsoever within Lithia Park. This is something I brought up when I first came on the commission. I was surprised that there's not any sculpture in there. And I was told that the Parks Commission does not want sculpture in their period. Am I mistaken?
Yes. Do you recall, for example, the small Japanese lantern?
Yes.
The memorial? Okay, so have you seen that's now placed? It's right
yeah.
Across from the tennis courts. It's a very nice piece, but Sandy?
So I actually came across City of Ashland Parks and Recreation Commission adopted policy, art policy, and it was adopted in 2002 by a motion, and it describes how they would look at the placement of public art on dedicated parkland. They define public art. They set guidelines. There's an advisory panel that they suggest. So there is actually a policy for public art on parklands. Now, that doesn't necessarily say specifically Lithia Park. So that's the only caveat to the whole thing.
I would expect that they would be certainly be a little more guarded and protective of maintaining the integrity that Lithia Park has right now. So I would expect it would be more difficult to have something placed in that park as opposed to some of the other ones that may be smaller. But you know, it is something that is open for discussion. So
good.
As far as the donor goes, you know, I explained to her that I just couldn't put it before the commission to consider in the fact that it did not conform with the ordinance. And she completely understood that and agreed with me. She was not aware of how many duplicates there were out there. She did express an interest in perhaps helping in another way towards another project. So I was excited to hear that, because as the possibilities for the racial equity resolution projects, that's a possible way that this donor could help. And she seemed excited about that possibility as well. So there is some light at the end of the tunnel on that generous offer that she made. Let's see, commission vacancies. As we stand now, Aaron, it is posted, right?
The recorder always has a page up online listing all vacancies to all commissions. Yes.
Okay.
And there's now a link from the public arts page that says that there are vacancies and links to the recorder's page where the application resides.
Okay. And Laura, you'll be, we'll be waiting for word on your meeting with the mayor and all that.
Yes, and what Aaron just mentioned, that's what the process I did through that webpage for the application. So yeah, I'm just waiting now.
Now I had it. I see we're it's 10:30 now, and perhaps I'll move these suggestions forward to the next meeting. We talked plenty under the PAC work plan. We talked plenty about the selection panel. As far as the strategic planning review, it was my intention. Yes, Sandy.
Can I interrupt you? I think Jennifer and I both need to leave, and I've tried to add a chat, but I've been unsuccessful. So I have another meeting coming up.
Sure.
Thank you. Great to see everyone. Good meeting, and we'll talk soon.
Okay.
Bye.
So, yes, Jennifer. Oh, okay. Just waiting. I gotcha. Okay. So as I said, my intent was to kind of, rather than devote a whole huge block of time towards the strategic planning goals, I wanted to kind of plow through it a little bit at a time. We're out of time for today. I think we've got tons on our plate to work on for the next couple months. And as I have looked through the strategic planning goals, I feel like everything that we're working on fits within those goals. So my recommendation is just to put that on hold until our workload lightens up a little bit. Between the selection panel and the whole process around the hub sculpture, we've got plenty to do for right now, as well as Jennifer's and Peter's work on the expanding awareness. Thank you all for attending.
Great, thanks, guys. See you next month.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.